Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. Today we're going to be talking about Dectus stem borer and gall midge larvae. And let me just say this, if you've never even heard of these insects before, and if you say, well, I'm not going to have those bugs on my farm, let me just put it to you this way. There are a lot of other insects that are similar to these, and more than anything, we are going to talk about insects, insecticides, and just how you kind of manage through those issues that may come up on your farm, regardless of what your crop is. If you've got a question for us, or if you'd just like to talk about anything going on your farm, we'd love to take your phone call here. Our number is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can send me a note on Twitter, agphdmedia, or Brian Hefty. So my brother Darren's out the next couple of days, and so I'd really love to take your phone call. It's just me here in the studio the next couple of days, but we're going to have a lot of fun talking about a number of different things, and we'll get to your questions certainly in the Ag PhD mailbag later on in the show as well. But when I think about these two insects, Dectus stem borer and gall midge larvae, we on our farm have not had Dectus stem borer yet, but we just found gall midge larvae this year. Now, this gall midge is something that you may not be familiar with, and you may not think that you have it in your soybeans, but I would challenge you to look in your soybeans, especially around the field borders, and what you're looking for is some plants that may look stunted, just damaged, almost like they've gotten some hail, or just you look at the stem and it doesn't look right. Here's what this bug is and what it does. So the gall midge is a fly. It's going to go around throughout the growing season, and it will lay eggs. It's supposed to be a pretty weak flyer, so it doesn't go far. You usually find it where there were soybeans last year or right near where there were soybeans last year, but it does seem to be worse around the borders of fields. Anyway, if you go to these field borders and you do find any plants that look damaged, just slice them down the middle, and what you're looking for is kind of an orange little worm inside. Now, they start out really, really small and white, but once they get a little bit bigger, then they are going to be orange. They're still going to be relatively small. But when you find those inside the stem, the odds are very high that you're looking at this gall midge larvae. Anyway, the concern that we have, whether it's gall midge, whether it's Dectus stem borer, whether it's wheat stem sawfly that we see in wheat, the concern is this. Once an insect gets inside your stem, how are you going to get it under control with an insecticide? You think about that for a second. If we can get insecticide over the top of a crop and it touches the insect, then we've got an extremely high probability that we're going to get that insect under control. But the trouble is when it's inside that stem and it's protected in there, you know, there's just no way to get insecticide in. The only possibility would be if there was something that was systemic that did have some activity inside. So it's a real challenge. Well, again, if you'd like to call into the show, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. It's exactly what Randall just did from Illinois. Hey, Randall, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Excellent. So I hear you've had some Dectus stem borer in the past.
Yeah, we've been experiencing stem borer activity for about the past 5 years. And this year is probably one of the worst years that we've ever occurred. It started off like what Jens was talking about around the field borders.
Yep.
Just some spots in the edges, you know, the rest of the field would be mature, and then you got plants out there that's green stemmed and green leaves, but the pods are mature and, you know, it's ready to harvest. What we're running into on my farm, I had one field in particular, you know, we got delayed in getting in there to get it harvested, and I would be safe to say that we probably lost at least 5 bushel to the acre from the damage where they bored into the actual stalk of the plant, and then the plant just fell over where it was, you know, unable to, you know, even achieve getting the plant into the header on it. One of the things that I noticed this year too, in areas in the field where, you know, the plants were still green, like what we was talking, you could see the yield monitor go anywhere between 10 to 15 bushel off of what the rest of the field was making.
Yeah, that's all terrible. It's some of the guys that have had this gall midge pretty bad. I mean, we've seen complete devastation where they've literally lost everything. Now, fortunately, it hasn't been many acres, but still, when you go from 60, 70, 80 bushels down to zero, that's a real problem. So what have you done to try to manage through this, Randall?
Well, I've talked to some different, crop specialists, and, you know, rotation is one of the key significant things. The problem I've got is I've got some ground that's, you know, not very highly productive. And when I say that is it's not good to plant corn, you know, every other year. It's just not got the capabilities of, you know, having a good corn crop on it. So we'll end up, you know, planting maybe 2-3 years of soybeans and then try to rotate in a corn crop there.
Sure.
That's where we're really seeing, you know, the damage the most is soybeans after soybeans, you know, on it. So if you got a corn soybean rotation, it seems like the damage is a little bit less, but there's still damage out there. One of the things I did notice is I planted two varieties in the planter. I got a bulk field planter and same maturity but different companies. They liked one brand versus the other, but then you might go to the next field and it would be vice versa on that.
That sounds a little frustrating, Randall. Hey, Randall, if you wouldn't mind, we got to take a quick commercial break, but I got a couple more questions for you because this is great stuff.
Okay.
I'm glad you're sharing this with everybody, somebody who's got experience with Decta stem borer. All right, well, if you can hang on for me just a minute here, we'll be right back to you.
Yep.
So once again, today we are talking about some of these problem insects, gall midge, Decta stem borer. If you've got a question for us or you'd like to talk about issues going on in your farm, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Right before the break, we were talking to Randall, who was calling in from Illinois, discussing the Decta stem borer that he's had out on his farm. So, Randall, thanks again for calling in, and thanks for holding on for me during that quick break there. But my next question for you was, have you tried any insecticides, or has anybody in your area tried any insecticides? Have you done any of that, and if so, has that worked?
No, we haven't tried any insecticides. from what I've gathered from different researchers is there's a very small window.
Yep.
Of what you could say application, and whenever I'm saying small window, they're talking like 48 hours, and you know it would be almost virtually impossible to you know try to achieve that. Because I feel that you wouldn't really necessarily get the good penetration of the product to the area where the little stem bores are born in. Because if nobody's experienced this, we're talking about a little old worm that's less than a, you know, about 3/8 of an inch long. And he's burrowing in about an inch to inch and a half off the ground into the side of the stem of the soybean. So you're talking a soybean canopy, you know, could be 3 foot tall, and you're trying to achieve, you know, application of to control something or other that's only an inch off the ground. So I was talking to some of my seed reps, and I said, we need some BT soybeans. Because I said,
yep.
This here's just as bad, this is bad or worse than, you know, corn borer in corn on that scenario.
You know, there is a BT soybean that is used down in South America for a different type of worm. But, yeah, I'm certain that once we find more stem borers, we find more gall midge, all these insects that are now boring inside our soybean plants, I am certain that the big companies are going to be looking a lot harder at these BT options, because I'm with you. It's a real difficult challenge, and we haven't found great success from insecticides before. Randall, anything else you got for us on Decta stem borer?
The only thing I'll is if, you know, guys see soybean plants in their field that, you know, has been broke over, and there's just stems, you know, sticking out of the ground. It'll look like the plant was just cut off with a sickle, but, you know, the combine's not ever been through. Pull those little stems up, take your pocket knife, split them in half, and you will find him in there. Guarantee it. Because he will fill up the top of that stem, what's sticking out of the ground, so yep. He will sit there and overwinter into that plant. Thank you for taking my call today.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Randall. That was great stuff. Really appreciate it. All right, let's go next to Bob Wright. He is an extension specialist with University of Nebraska down in Lincoln. Bob, how are you today?
Oh, pretty good.
Good. I don't know how much you heard about our talk there with Randall out in Illinois about Dectus stem borer, but in Nebraska, I think you got some stem borers, and now you're getting a whole bunch of gall midge, correct?
Right. They're, I don't know if you'd say fortunately or not, but they're somewhat in different areas. The soybean stem borer is more in south-central Nebraska,
yep.
And the gall midge is more closely a couple of counties east of the Missouri River in eastern Nebraska mostly.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've heard, is that the gall midge has been much closer to my state of South Dakota. I know we've found gall midge in our farm, and we've identified it in a whole bunch of counties here in South Dakota now too.
Right.
So
yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what you know with either one of these insects. I'm most interested in what can a farmer do to hopefully prevent either one of these bugs from destroying his yield.
Okay, well, with the Dectes stem borer, soybean stem borer, the Illinois farmer was talking about that insecticide timing is difficult, and I don't know that
yep.
There's one period of 48 hours, but the issue is the adults are active over several weeks, and they can move around from field to field, and so one spray probably is not going to be good enough to have a great degree of suppression of the stem tunneling or stem boring.
Right.
And so that's an issue. If you're willing to spray a couple of times, you might be able to, and even if you do, you're not going to get 100% control, but you probably can reduce the incidence somewhat.
Okay, but let me ask you this. With both of these bugs, and just like Randall was talking about, he's had more of a problem around the field borders, at least as this thing got going. So is it something where a farmer could, if he was going to try something, I'm not saying it's going to be perfect with either one of them, because we know it's not, but let's say that a guy wanted to try just spraying his field borders, maybe where he's had some problems before, just spray that outside pass two or three times. What would you think of that?
Well, yeah, it'd have to be two or three times because the timing would be different for the different insects. The gall midge is coming in earlier in the season. The soybean stem borer is coming in, at least in our area, late June and early July is when it starts to emerge. Yeah, that would be a possibility, particularly for the gall midge, I think, because they're very restricted to the borders, what we've seen so far. The soybean stem borer can move into the field eventually. It just initially is concentrated on the field edges.
So why do you think it is with either insect that it's just on the field edges? Do they like our grass, our ditches? I mean, why so much on the field borders?
Well, with the beetle, the soybean stem borer, at least in Nebraska, you know, typically we have corn soybean rotations,
yep.
And so they're moving from last year's soybeans into this year's soybeans.
Right.
And they only fly, initially they fly as far as they have to, so if they find soybeans right next to last year's soybeans, they'll tend to concentrate on the borders. With the soybean gall midge, we're not sure, but we think they probably overwinter outside the field or in last year's soybeans, and again with rotation, they're moving into soybeans from either outside of the field or field borders. So it's mostly where they overwinter.
Do you think the problem with both of these insects is getting worse because more people are going to reduce tillage, not tilling up the soybeans?
Well, that's a possibility for the soybean stem borer. We don't know for sure on the gall midge. I was just talking to Justin McMeekin this morning, and he's leading a lot of our work in Nebraska, that a grower called him with that question whether tillage would help, and we don't know, but we're going to be doing some on-farm testing this year, this coming year in Nebraska, Iowa, and South Dakota to try to look at some of these questions.
Yeah, because I've had a few guys suggest to me, well, if it's just on the outside borders, why don't I just plant corn on my borders and I'll plant beans on the inside of the field? But in effect, then, your theory is they're just making wherever the beans start, that is the outside, and the bug is going to get as far as it needs to get to find those beans, right?
Right, yeah. And so they don't want to fly any further than they have to, either insects, so they'll tend to concentrate where they first find food.
Now, it sounds like with the gall midge, this hasn't been a problem for a real long time, so it's not something that many universities have been studying very long, correct?
Right, and we're working with taxonomists with the USDA and other, actually a Japanese taxonomist. And this is a new species, not previously identified, so we don't even know anything about its biology, basically. It hasn't been recorded as a species before, so we don't know much about its biology. We can maybe learn a little bit from some related species, but
I just heard that.
We have a lot of questions, though.
Yep, I just heard that same thing, that it was a brand new species, and as a farmer, I just got to shake my head like, there's always something, some brand new insect just happens to come up now, and it really is affecting soybeans. And soybeans, actually, the last few years, our yields have gotten pretty decent. So we say, boy, maybe we can make a few dollars with soybeans. Now we got to try to overcome this hurdle. Hey, Bob, thanks a lot for your time today. Again, we've been talking to Bob Wright with University of Nebraska. Thanks, Bob.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye.
Once again, today we are talking about Decta stem borer and gall midge larvae, or gall midge, the adult and the larvae. If you've got any questions about this or anything you'd like to talk about with this insect or any other agronomic issues you've got going on in your farm, you can call us here at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Avoid dry run failures with the new Hypro Force Field Pump. Providing the ultimate protection, this wet seal pump will save you on costly in-season downtime to keep your sprayer running. Now all you have to worry about is the weather. Hypro. Helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic is proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. Today we're talking about gall midge and Dectus stem borer. Next on the show, we've got Scott Stewart. He is with University of Tennessee. Scott, how are you today?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm fortunate that on our farm we haven't had this Dectus stem borer problem yet. So tell us a little bit more about this insect. How has it been affecting farmers down in your state of Tennessee?
Well, it's very common, and it tends to be especially prevalent where you do a lot of no-tillage, because the insect actually spends its life, it overwinters at the base of the plant, really at or below the soil level. And so if you're not tilling up the plants, that gives it a better chance to overwinter. And, of course, we got a lot of no-till down here, so this is one we deal with. It's not uncommon to go into fields that are 70, 80, 90-plus percent infested. And it feeds inside the stem, so a lot of people don't know they're there, but it's very common.
When you talk about it overwinters, what form is it in? What stage is it at in its life cycle? And the only reason why I bring that up, if it's still a worm at that point, once the plant gets cut, couldn't you spray insecticide at that point then in the fall and get some potential kill, or does that not work?
It doesn't work, and I'm going to describe it, and I'm going to first tell people that if they're familiar with southwestern corn borer and how it overwinters, it's very similar. What it does at the end of the season is it tunnels down the plant, and it's on the inside of the stem,
yep.
Goes down to the ground level, and then from the inside it cuts a groove, essentially cuts around it almost like it's cutting a pipe, and it caps the stalk, and those stalks will be 1, 2, 3 inches above ground. They'll be girdled is what we call it, and they'll snap off very cleanly. And that larvae is snug inside that stem. It's got a bunch of sawdust and stuff plugged up in the top. It keeps rainfall from getting in, parasites and pesticides too. So I don't think there's really much chance at all you could spray for it. And that's one of the challenges with the insects, other than the adults, every life stage is inside the plant, starting with the egg lay all the way up until it overwinters as a larva.
Years ago, so this is a long time back, I used to work for FMC, and we sold Furadan into the sunflower market to deal with these basically stem borers, these bugs that were inside the plant. And the whole idea was, the principle was that Furadan had some systemic activity and it could kill some bugs inside the plant. There's also Regent, which we know is systemic, that's not labeled in soybeans. But do you think there's a possibility we could get a systemic insecticide at some point that might give us some control of this bug?
That's a great question. And in fact, it's funny that you mentioned Regent, because we've evaluated for several years, myself and some of my colleagues, a seed treatment, which was the same active ingredient.
Yep.
The seed treatment's not labeled either, but it was very good at controlling larval infestations. What was interesting about that study is, even though we got very good control with the seed treatment, we didn't get yield response. And that's one of the challenges, because really the best we could tell, the only reason you get yield loss with Decti stem borers when you get this lodging at the end of the season. And we don't consistently see that. Now, having said that, I've seen a lot of it this year in fields and had a lot of calls. We've had definitely people suffer some yield loss from these plants lodging, because where they make that girdle, it'll just break over. It's not just laying over like beans often lodge. These plants actually snap over, and it's hard for them to combine. So our best recommendation typically is, if once you get a Decti's infestation and you know you got a heavy infestation, is try to harvest as quickly as possible, so you don't get that lodging. The challenge for us this year in our neck of the woods has been weather has not been very helpful. So we've had a hard time getting our soybean harvested.
You know, as you were saying that, I was just thinking about all the people that over the years have told me the same exact thing about wheat stem sawfly. It's one of the worst problems that we see out in like the state of Montana, for example. And the solution is just harvest early. Well, as a farmer, that makes me awfully nervous because of exactly what you said. Sometimes the weather's against me. My plan, like even this fall on our farm, my plan was to be done with harvest 3 weeks earlier than we got done. So all of a sudden, where we think, oh yeah, we're going to be there on time, we got you know, 1, 2, 3 weeks of rain and we couldn't get out there. And then, yeah, if I had that Decti's infestation, then all of a sudden my plants go over. So what do I do?
Well, and it's really frustrating, and I'm not sure what to tell you. Really, the only stage you can spray for is the adult. It's actually kind of a pretty longhorn beetle. But the problem is they come out over an extended period of time, six to 8 weeks. They lay their eggs in the petioles. And so you either repeated spraying and you have to time them perfectly. And really, there's very little data that's economical or works. And what's frustrating to me, Brian, is I've planted plots of different varieties, because a lot of times we'll see this hits a variety worse than others. And I've planted different varieties and planted at different times and let them stand. And they're very heavily infested and they never lodge. And then the next week I go to a grower's field and he's got tons of girdling and lodging and clearly yield loss. And I haven't been able to figure out what the trigger is that causes that girdling and that lodging, nor really a very effective way of managing them. And you know, I said you can till and get rid of the overwintering larvae, but unless your neighbors are all tilling, they're pretty mobile, so they'll just migrate in. So it's one of the frustrating ones. I guess the good news is that I'd say the vast majority of the time, the tunneling in the stalk doesn't really cause any yield loss. It's just those rare occasions where you get the lodging. But again, frustrating that I can't really tell you a good way to prevent that.
You know, it was interesting. We had a farmer call in from Illinois earlier in the show, and he said, where he'd planted two different varieties in a field, there was a difference from one variety to the next. But he said the problem was, I'd go to the next field and it was the exact opposite. So he said, I haven't been able to figure out either which varieties are necessarily resistant or tolerant to this particular insect. How about you? Have you seen a whole lot of difference with varieties?
Well, you very clearly see differences, but it's also very clear they can flip-flop, and a lot of it has to do with the maturity of the beans when the beetles are out.
Got it.
Because they like a certain size. They won't go after small beans. They'll go in there right around first bloom, and this kind of matches up, and they have preferences. Like I said, we've got a couple varieties I've seen tend to get it more, but that year they were later planted wheat beans, and I think it just coincided with the adult activity, and the next year it'll flop. And I've had a number of calls from Illinois, particularly southern Illinois, where they've had a lot of lodging this year.
When we think about rotation, and let's say I wanted to rotate to corn for a while, that sounds good, but are there any other host pests that could potentially be out in my corn that would keep this bug going if I don't have soybeans?
I don't think so. That giant ragweed is a good alternative host for them. This insect also gets on sunflower, so areas that grow sunflower will see something similar. They'll see some of the girdling behavior, but there's not anything in a cornfield, I think, that would be an alternate host for them.
Yeah, but you do mention giant ragweed, and there's a lot more of that anymore. So basically, a farmer needs to make sure he's getting his weeds under control early. If he's got sunflowers or giant ragweed, that'd probably be the advice, right?
I think so. But again, it's probably just too little if you're surrounded by a bunch of soybean acres that are sure. No-till and a great source for overwintering adults to emerge.
Sure. All right, what haven't we covered? What else can you tell us about this particular insect?
Well, I think we've done a pretty good job with it. I think one real key take-home is towards the end of the season, you know, right before harvest, get out and you can actually start cutting the stalks or splitting the stalks, and you can get a sense for how badly that field's infested. And if you find a couple of fields that are clearly way more infested than the others, you might be able to prioritize harvest on those fields and push the other ones back a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. We talk about that same type of thing in corn, too, just with all the different stalk diseases there are and everything. So, you know, we got a lot of people already doing that in corn. And basically now you're saying we should probably do that in soybeans, too, if we're starting to see some of these insects.
Yeah, and, you know, especially if you got several different varieties, because like you said, planting date varieties can influence which fields are most heavily infested. And so if you got, like I said, some variety or planting date that got picked on, of course you got to harvest when it's ready, but you might have the opportunity to go fast. Or, you know, in our neck of the woods, some people will even apply harvest dates to speed up harvest, and that might help in situations where you have a heavy infestation.
We've been talking to Scott Stewart with University of Tennessee. Scott, thanks a lot for the time today. That was great insight. Really appreciate it.
No, thank you.
All right, stay tuned. We will be right back with your questions after this.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a Soil Warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contans No Risk Guarantee. Start a Contan's white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to GrowSmartRewards.com. Grow Smart with BASF.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. Today we're talking about a couple of real problem insects that you may not have seen yet on your farm, but these two bugs are spreading around the country, gall midge and dectostem borer. With the gall midge, it is a fly in the adult stage, and then it's a worm. They would actually call it a maggot inside that stem. And then with dectostem borer, that's going to be a beetle. It's kind of a long, gray, grayish-looking beetle. And then, once again, you're going to have a worm inside the stem. So that's the real problem. When we start talking about control of these two insects, spraying insecticide, the timing would have to be just right, because you've got either that fly in the case of the gall midge, or the beetle in the case of the stem borer, dectostem borer. You've got those over a long period of time. I mean, it might be a month or 2 months where they're flying over your fields. How are you going to get that timing right? So fortunately, we aren't seeing this on all soybean acres across the country. And fortunately, it is usually a bigger problem on field borders. So a lot of times, if you wanted to treat or if you wanted to try something, you could do it on the field borders. Generally speaking, we're not looking at enormous total field losses. But like in the case of the gall midge, we've got some guys we're working with now that they're experiencing 100% yield loss. Granted, it's only in a few acres, but still, I mean, nobody wants to see that. So we'd love to find an alternative there. Maybe there will be a BT option in the future. Maybe there will be a residual systemic insecticide option in the future. Today, I don't really know what to tell you. It's a real challenge with both insects. Now, one question that did come in over our break here, Mark from Iowa just asked, do winter temperatures affect the overwintering of stem borers? Are they better up north for death loss of the larvae? Well, it does appear so with the dectostem borer that the cold temps may be killing off more, but I mean, that only makes sense. With the gall midge, though, we are seeing those quite a long ways north. We're seeing those all the way up into northern South Dakota, into central Minnesota at least. So who knows? By next year, maybe we'll identify some in North Dakota and northern Minnesota. So it's a long ways north compared to where a lot of these dectostem borer issues are. There have been some dectostem borers identified in southeast South Dakota. Fortunately, not a big problem, but there have been some identified. Now, with the stem borer, there's been a lot more research. That bug has been around longer that we've known about. So I will tell you that tillage does seem to help. I believe that tillage could possibly help you with both insects, but we just don't know much about that gall midge at this point. Like we were talking about a little bit ago with Robert Wright from University of Nebraska, this gall midge, it's a brand new species that's never been identified anywhere else in the world, and it just got identified here in the last few years. So that's troubling, that's concerning, and unfortunately, we just don't have a lot of research work or a lot of experience with that. But again, when we're seeing it on the borders of fields, that tells me two things. Number one, with really both of these insects, if we know somebody has had a problem in their soybean fields last year, and we're now this year going to plant soybeans right next to them, that could be a real problem. So if it's a big concern to you, or let's say you talk to the neighbor and the neighbor says, boy, that was an enormous issue for me, you know what? I might just plant corn there or wheat or some other crop. So, you know, that is one way to, with a cultural practice, avoid the problem. The other thing that you could certainly try would be these border applications, but you might need to spray several times. And, you know, that stinks. Now, fortunately, if you do have your own sprayer, it doesn't cost a lot of money to run a sprayer across a field, especially if you're just making one pass in the field, you know, just on the field borders. And insecticide's dirt cheap. What we found with flies and with most beetles, the cheap pyrethroids for $2 an acre or less will give you outstanding control. But again, the timing is the real key. How are you going to get that timing right when the flight or the hatch might be over a 4 to 6 to possibly even 8 week period? That's the real challenge. Now, with all bugs, the earlier in the season they strike, typically the more problem they cause for you because disease ends up getting into the plant later on. So what I'm trying to say here is, if it was me and I was real concerned about this and I wanted to try something, I'd be spraying almost right away as soon as you see any of those flies around, as soon as you see any of those beetles around, depending on the insect, I'd be spraying immediately. You want to try to get them before they're laying the eggs. Once the eggs are laid, then it doesn't do any good to kill the adults anymore. It's too late. What you're trying to prevent is the egg laying, and then you don't get the worms inside that stem. So anyway, these are real challenging problems, and hopefully you don't have them on your farm, but it's very likely if you raise soybeans in the United States, or for that matter, even in Canada, you may end up getting a bug that is either like this or that is one of these two insects. If it is a stem boring insect, I don't care what crop it is, if it's a stem boring insect, that is a real tough one simply because the insecticides just are not very effective. Now, the one interesting thing, well, one of the many interesting things that Scott Stewart said from University of Tennessee is in their trials, Regent actually, as a seed treatment, did an excellent job at controlling dectostembor. Now, when I had recent conversations with BSF, they said they weren't planning to label Regent in soybeans, and I really question that. So let's just put it this way. If there's a treatment option out there that's not currently labeled, yet we know it works, I don't understand that. So maybe we need to have some more discussions with BSF on Regent and some other companies that may have similar products that could give us some activity inside these plants. All right, if you've got any more questions about dectostembor or gall midge or gall midge larvae, just give us a call here at 844-44-AG-PHD. Otherwise, for now, we're going to get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, first question that comes in today is asking about how well does manganese move in the soil? Well, manganese is a micronutrient, and it is one that we talk quite commonly about here on the show, in part because over the last 20, 30, 40 years on the farm, it certainly seems like everybody is focused on NPK, 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 and we look at a lot of soil tests. I mean, literally every day I'm looking at soil tests, and I see a lot of good levels in the soil of P and K, and a lot of people that are willing to invest money in nitrogen. Okay, that's great. Those are the primary nutrients. We want you to focus on that. But when it comes to manganese, it's been a forgotten nutrient, but it is still incredibly important. It can help you a lot with emergence. If you're having emergence issues, manganese could be one of the things that you are lacking. So I would take a look at your manganese levels in the soil, make sure, and really in plant tissue analysis as well, and make sure your levels are good. So this question about how well does manganese move in the soil, I'll put it to you this way. Manganese can move somewhat. It's not like phosphorus or zinc, where it hardly moves in the soil at all. But manganese isn't super leachable either, like nitrate, or for that matter, even sulfate or boron. So it's somewhere in between. It can move to some degree, but if you have heavy soil, like we do on our farm, for the most part, and not a lot of rain, again, like we do on our farm, I don't count on manganese to move a whole lot. Just like for some people, they'll say, oh, potassium can leach in my soil. Well, it doesn't leach for us because we just don't have the rainfall and we have really heavy soil on most of our land. So that is one of the things that I would tell you. Yes, if you have lots of rain, if you have sandy soil, then manganese can move fairly well. So it's one of those nutrients where, depending on my situation, I might broadcast it if I did, then I would consider tilling that in. Or if you do have light soil with a lot of rainfall, you could expect that to move in slowly over a long period of time, and you'd probably just be just fine. Once again, manganese, I'd call it kind of moderate in terms of how easily it's going to move in soil. Well, we'll get to more of your questions coming up right after this. If you've got any questions for us, radio@agphd.com is our email address. You can just send them there. We'll get to that right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
It's tough to keep your stored soybeans in perfect condition. To maintain beans at 13% moisture, you need to run your bin fans when outside air humidity is at 70%. For 12% moisture, you need to run at 65%. For 11, 60. How can you possibly get the timing right yourself if you don't know the humidity at your bin site and aren't there to switch on your fans? The Steps GMS Temperature Humidity Switch is your low-cost solution. For more information, visit us at stepsgms.com.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Brian Hefty here live in the Morton studio, just wrapping up our Ag PhD show today. If you've got any questions for us, 844-44-AG-PHD or email us radio@agphd.com. Got an email in here this afternoon from Mark out in Maryland. He sent us a picture of what looks like a soybean stem and some Dectus stem borer inside it, unfortunately. So yes, this is a problem around much of the United States, but it does seem to be much more prevalent as we go just a little bit further south. So when we start getting into Nebraska, Missouri, Kentucky, out to Maryland, some of these states, we're finding a lot more of it than we are in South Dakota and Minnesota, for example. So I thought there was a good comment earlier, too, that Scott Stewart had from University of Tennessee when he said, even though we're finding Dectus stem borer quite commonly, there isn't always yield loss. If you harvest early, it does appear that you know, a lot of this tunneling that they do and the amount of them that are inside the plant, it isn't that terribly damaging unless the plant falls over. So if you can harvest it early before the plant falls over, usually you're in pretty good shape. Now, that's still very, very concerning to me. I wouldn't want any bugs inside my plant, even though, yeah, this year they might not be doing yield damage. You know, I mean, at some point you have to believe that's coming. So it's definitely concerning to me. All right, next question comes from Matt in Minnesota. He says, hi guys, I'm wondering if you're going to have your agronomy and soils workshops this winter. No, Matt, we are not. We are changing things up a little bit this winter. The last few years, we've done agronomy workshops, we've done soils clinics, and we've done advanced soils clinics. This year, we're doing some different things. One of the ones we're doing is a collegiate agronomy workshop, where we're actually going to be giving away a bunch of college scholarships. That's going to be January 3rd. We also have 101 ways to cut expenses on your farm. That's our big focus this winter. And then we've got a few other ones that we're going to do just here at our Ag PhD Field Day site in the Morton Center. By the way, the Morton Center is large, so we can handle big crowds, and we would love it if you came to our farm and joined us for some of the other workshops we're going to do. Here, I'm just going to pull those up real quick, what our schedule is on those other workshops. And by the way, our schedule is all at agphd.com if you want to go to that. Just click on our events tab, and that's got all the information there. The other workshops we're going to have, in addition to the 101 ways to cut farm expenses today, include an advanced pest management workshop, secrets of high yield fields, and what your fertilizer dealer won't tell you. Now, we do have one other session that's not us, but it's Neil Kinsey, who we often talk to on the show here. Fantastic. He's known worldwide as a great soils expert. And anyway, he is going to be here at the Morton Center and right on our Ag PhD Field Day site March 5th through the 7th. If you're interested in that, all the rest of our workshops are free. Now, normally Neil, for his workshops, charges quite a bit. It's normally like $1,500 if you want to go to one of his 3-day classes. But here, it's only going to be $150, and that includes all meals. You're going to get like 6 meals out of this deal and a copy of his hands-on agronomy book. So all this information, once again, is on our website at agphd.com. But I would certainly encourage you to attend any of our Ag PhD workshops and also attend Neil Kinsey's class that he's going to be having here March 5th through the 7th. All right, next one comes from Guy, who says, my soil test tells me that my soil's pH is 5.3, and the TEC, which we would often call CEC, he's talking about total exchange capacity. We often talk about cation exchange capacity. His TEC is 3.24, so in other words, it's pretty light soil. And he says, among deficiencies, we lack calcium and magnesium. So they're applying a lot of dolomite. That's lime that's going to have both magnesium and calcium in it, as opposed to the calcitic lime that is predominantly calcium. Anyway, he said, last week I attended a talk by a soil specialist who said that lime will not go down in the soil. Therefore, broadcasting lime is a waste of money. Now he says, this guy's way smarter than me, but I'm not sure I believe him, and I don't want to believe him. I grow macadamia nuts on wet slopes, so tillage is a total non-option. When I watch your show, I see lime being broadcast onto what looks like no-till fields. Is it getting down? Yes, Guy, it absolutely is. And he says here, by the way, to wrap things up, he goes, my year-to-date rainfall is 274 inches. Seriously, that's about double normal. We are on the windward slope of a Hawaiian island. I'm hoping that it's weather and not climate. Otherwise, I need to make some serious accommodations. What I see you guys doing is way different than what we do, but it definitely gets my brain moving. Okay, so Guy, lime absolutely does move down in soil. Now, here's the whole thing. I'm a skeptic of just about everything, and I encourage almost every farmer to be a skeptic as well and prove things out on your farm. So not knowing if lime was going to move down or not, we started running tests 0 to 6 inches, 6 to 12, 12 to 18, 18 to 24, probably 10 years ago on some ground that we have now put 25 tons of lime on, and we have found that it absolutely moved down. And yes, we did do some tillage out there, but our tillage was only maybe to 6 inches deep, six, maybe eight, possibly. So even if we moved it to 6 or 8 inches, how did it get down into that 18 to 24 inch range? And this is really heavy soil, by the way, like 40 cation exchange capacity with average rainfall of 20 inches per year. So with your 274 inches per year, now granted, if that's double normal, you still, even so, if you're talking 130, 140 inches of rain a year, that's going to move a lot of stuff in a super sandy soil. So anyway, test it yourself. Test your top six, your next six, your next six, your next six, and just see over time what ends up happening. And if you find out that whatever lime you're using in your particular soil, it's not getting down, then yeah, you've got to make some changes. But until I prove that on my farm, I'm not going to change anything, because everything that we've always been told and everything we've always known and everything that we've found on our own farm through testing has shown that lime absolutely moves down into the soil. All right, let's see. Next one here is from Randy, and he says, I've been to a couple of your fertilizer clinics, and I've been watching your show since you started Ag PhD. Thanks for all the help and great information you guys share with everyone. I'd like to ask you a few questions. For one, all the informational seminars you guys put on are amazing, but I can only make it to a few. Would it be possible for you to air some of these seminars on your website so we can view them, even if we can't make it to them? Randy, we have not broadcast our workshops, and we really don't plan to in the future. It's hard when you're in those types of settings and facilities to have good sound, good lighting. I mean, it's a lot of editing work to make it look decent. So we do take little snippets of what we do, and we will incorporate those into our Ag PhD television show over a long period of time. I'm not going to tell you that everything's on there, but that's part of the reason why we do it, is just the production value and the production quality. The other reason why we don't webcast our workshops is these are, let's put it this way, more unfiltered. So there are things that I am absolutely going to say in our workshops. I'm going to cut right to it, and I'm going to say things that maybe aren't politically correct, that certain companies wouldn't like, that I shouldn't be saying on TV or radio. So if you want the unfiltered version, you got to actually come to the workshops. The workshops, I love what we do on TV and radio. The workshops are my favorite thing to do, and for many of the people who attend them, that they are their favorites as well. All right, anyway, his next question here is, when I'm done spraying weeds with herbicide, I usually have a little bit left. Let's say I have 20 gallons left. What would be the best way to get rid of this? I have been diluting it with water and then rinsing it out, but I'd like to do the right thing and dispose of it properly. What would you recommend? Thanks again for all you guys and your families do for agriculture. All right, so Randy, there are a lot of custom applicators that we work with, and you know, obviously a lot of farmers that we consult with all around the world. And what we typically will advise them to do is, if you can do this, you always have to do everything legally, and that's always going to be our advice. But we will typically go back out into the field. As long as we're not going at too high a rate, we'll cut the rate back enough so we can make our last application, get rid of all that stuff out in the field, and we haven't overdone it in an area necessarily. And with modern technology, we're all getting a lot better at being right down to the last gallon or last few gallons, so there usually is not a lot of rinsate that we have to deal with. All right, well, we hope you've enjoyed our show today. Before we go, I just want to say thanks to our production staff, our guests, and everybody who called or wrote in with questions. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. But now, stay tuned for Shark Farmer Radio.